Genesis 32 and 33. It's a little bit lengthy, but we need to read through it. You can't just jump right in the middle. So Genesis 32 and 33. Good stuff. Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named that place Mahanaim. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, "This is what you are to say to my master Esau. Your servant Jacob says, 'I have been staying with Laban and have remained there till now. I have cattle and donkeys, sheep and goats, men servants and maid servants. Now I am sending this message to my lord, that I may find favor in your eyes.' When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, 'We went to your brother Esau, and now he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him.' In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and herds and camels as well. If Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. Then Jacob prayed, 'O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, "Go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, "I will surely make you prosper, will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted." He spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau: 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows and 10 bulls, and 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. He put them in the care of his servants, each bird by itself, and said to his servants, "Go ahead of me and keep some space between the herds." He instructed the one in the lead, "When my brother Esau meets you and asks, 'To whom do you belong, and where are you going, and who owns all these animals in front of you?' then you are to say, 'They belong to your servant Jacob. They are a gift sent to my lord Esau, and he is coming behind us.'" He also instructed the second, the third, and all the others who followed the herds, "You are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. Be sure to say, 'Your servant Jacob is coming behind us.' For you thought, 'I will pacify him with these gifts I am sending on ahead. Later, when I see him, perhaps he will receive me.' So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. Jacob looked up, and there was Esau, coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and two maidservants. He put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed to the ground seven times as he approached his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. "Who are these with you?" he asked. Jacob answered, "They are the children God has graciously given your servant." Then the maidservants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, "What do you mean by all these robes I have?" "To find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, "I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." "No, please," said Jacob, "if I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God, now that you have received me favorably. Please accept the present that was brought to you. For God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need." Because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted. Then Esau said, "Let us be on our way. I'll accompany you." But Jacob said to him, "My lord knows that the children are tender and that I must care for the ewes and cows that are nursing their young. If they are driven hard just one day, all the animals will die. So let my lord go on ahead of his servant, while I move along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and that of the children, until I come to my lord and Seir." Esau said, "Let me leave some of my men with you." "But why do that?" Jacob asked. "Just let me find favor in the eyes of my lord." So that day Esau started on his way back to Seir. Jacob, however, went to Sukkot, where he built a place for himself and made shelters for his livestock. That is why the place is called Sukkot. After Jacob came from Padan Aram, he arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped within the sight of the city. For 100 pieces of silver, he bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, a plot of ground where he pitched his tent. There he set up an altar and called it El Elohei Israel. Lord, thank you for this day, and thank you for your faithfulness to us, already. As you gathered, as you heard, this is the story of Jacob's return home. And in returning home, he had to meet Esau. 20 years have passed since Jacob left home. You may recall that Jacob and his brother Esau, they had a little history between them. And that history actually started in the womb. They were twins. And in the womb, they struggled with each other. In the womb, they actually tried to crush each other. And the word was that the older would serve the younger. And Jacob was the younger. So Esau was born, and then Jacob right after him. And when they came out of the womb, Jacob was grabbing onto the heel of Esau. So they named him Jacob because of the way he was grasping after his older brother. Time went on, the boys grew a little bit. Esau loved to hunt. Jacob, he stayed around the tents more. And Esau had been out hunting, and he came back famished. And Jacob was fixing some stew, some red stuff that looked good. And Esau said, "Give me some of that red stuff. I'm famished, I'm hungry." Jacob said, "Tell me your birthright." And Esau thought a moment, maybe he didn't really think. But he thought, "What good is my birthright if I'm dead?" And so he sold his birthright for a pot of stew that just turned out to be a little soup. And he was upset with Jacob. Time passes. Their father Isaac is getting old. And Isaac decides that he wants to bless his oldest son. normally what would happen is when a father got old and he knew that his days were numbered, he would gather in all the sons and bless each of them. But Isaac, for whatever reason, maybe he felt like because of what Jacob did to Esau, the birthright, he was just going to leave Jacob out of the blessing. We don't know. But he calls for Esau, leaves Jacob out of the picture. And he intends to bless Esau. Well, Rebekah, the mom, heard about it. And Rebekah had a plan. And the plan was that while Esau is out hunting, Jacob, you dress up like Esau, and you bring the meal that Isaac wants, and you'll get the blessing. And the plan works. And Jacob pretends to be Esau and gets the blessing. And the blessing was that all the family members, brother especially, bow down to you. And this incredible blessing poured out on Jacob. And there was no blessing left for Esau. When Esau heard about this, he came and Isaac said, "I already gave my blessing." Esau was furious. Esau was so upset that he began to plot the murder of his brother. He was just waiting for Dad to die, and as soon as Dad died, he would kill his brother. Well, Jacob found out about it. His mom found out about it. So Jacob was sent out of town to the hometown of Moab under the guise of getting married. So think with me for a moment here. At birth, he's clutching the heel of Esau. When they come of age, he manipulates the birthright out of Esau. And then some time passes more, and he steals the blessing that was for Esau. He did his brother wrong, and now he's on the run for his life. He goes to the hometown and meets Laban, and kind of what goes around comes around. He thinks he's going to marry Rachel, the younger daughter, and ends up married to Leah, the older daughter. He was deceived. Leah pretended to be Rachel. And so he ends up marrying both of them. He ends up with both of their maidservants. He ends up with 11 sons and a daughter. He ends up basically slaving for 14 years, and then another 6 years on top of that, but his livestock increases. So he is 20 years away from home because he was on the run. While he was on the run, while he was on the way, the Lord met him in a dream, and the Lord told him, "I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to bring you back home." 20 years pass, but it's time to go back home. And so he heads back home, and what we read is kind of the episode where he's on his way back home. And he knows when he goes back home, he has to make things right with Esau. And apparently he hasn't heard from Esau. He doesn't know what's going on with Esau. But all he remembers is Esau's anger at him. And if he's going to go back home, somehow he's got to make things right with Esau. Might be worth just kind of pausing. Can you relate? Can you relate to Jacob? Where you weren't right with somebody and your only solution at that point was to run. And now it's a time to go back, and you know if you're going to go back, the only way you can go back is if you face up and if you make things right. And so that's the journey that Jacob is to go back, yet he knows he's going back to a situation that he left wrong. his way back, he senses that the Lord is with him. He has a vision of the angels of God. They're there. And then he comes up with a plan. And the plan was that he's going to divide up into two groups, thinking that if I divide up into two groups, into kind of two camps, and Esau comes and he sees the one camp and he wipes them out, at least I'll have the other camp. And the other camp will have time to run away again while the first camp is getting massacred by Esau. So he really doesn't have much faith that somehow he's going to make it back. He just knows that he needs to make the journey, and yet he's figuring out all these different ways to survive. And then he prays. And look at his prayer. He sent messengers to kind of check it out, to announce to Esau that Jacob's coming home. Will he find favor? And the word comes back, it's like Esau doesn't say a word. The messengers come back and say, yeah, Esau's coming to meet you, and he's got 400 men with him. And Jacob's scared to death. And so that's when he divides up into the two camps, thinking at least one will survive. And then he prays and listens to his prayer. We can learn something from his prayer. Chapter 32, verse 9. O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness that you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers who are their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper, and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. Jacob reflects in his prayer on the way the Lord has been good to him. For God has been faithful to him. And so Jacob is undertaking this journey home, this kind of frightening journey home, this risky journey home, under the direction of God. But he's afraid, but he's praying out, God, just as you have blessed me, watch over me, save me. Do you feel the struggle? Sometimes when we live in response to what God is calling us to do, it's also filled with fear. We don't know if we're really going to be able to carry it out. We don't know what's going to happen to us when we do get there, when we do carry it out. And so he's being obedient, but he's afraid as he's being obedient. He is responding to the leading of God, and yet in responding to the leading of God, yet at the same time there is this fear. And so he's kind of saying, God, you've been good to me. Oh God, keep being good to me. Oh God, deliver me. Oh God, save me from Esau. So I think it's really important to realize that it's okay to pray that way. That when we respond to God, sometimes there's a lot of fear mixed in the response. But he keeps responding. He keeps following. And so he does that. And one more thing. He reminds God of God's promise. God, it's like he's saying, God, I am taking this journey because you called me to take this journey. God, I'm being obedient to you. And it's almost as if he realizes that even if he doesn't deserve God's faithfulness, that God will be faithful to God's self. And so he's kind of basing his prayer on God's faithfulness, not on his worthiness, and especially not on his worthiness of God being faithful to him. God, be faithful to your own word. That's why I'm making the journey, because I know, God, you are true to yourself, even when I don't deserve you being true to me. He also comes up with a plan. And so he divides everything up. You do the math, there's something like 500 animals here. And he sends them out in different groups, and he instructs each leader of each group to say to Esau, that this all belongs to your servant Jacob, that they are a gift that are sent to my lord Esau. Now look with me over to in chapter 32, over to verse 20. And be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind us, for he thought, I will pacify him with these gifts I am sending on ahead later, when I see him. Perhaps he will receive me. This is kind of sacrificial language. In other words, Esau has a case against Jacob. Jacob has sinned against Esau. And so Esau is offering these gifts as kind of a way to atone for his sin against Esau. And so the gifts, in a sense, are supposed to persuade Esau to kind of cover his sin, to look away from his sin, and to show him favor, to show him grace, to have mercy upon him. So realize that there's some, it doesn't come through in our English as much, but realize that there's some religious language here, kind of presenting a sacrifice to Esau to atone for the sin that he committed against Esau. And he's hoping that Esau will respond to the sacrifice with favor. So that stuff is on the way. Middle of the night. Jacob can't sleep. Probably fear. So he gets up in the middle of the night and he moves everything left, his family, his wives, his kids, whatever possessions are left. He moves them across the river one step closer to Esau. And then he goes back to the other side. So now he's alone. And just visualize it. Here you have Esau coming with 400 men. And then you have these presents that are gone. And then you have your maidservants and their kids. And then you have Leah and her kids. And then you have Rachel and Joseph. And then you go back on the other side of the river. Why did he go back? I don't really know. But I'm wondering if it's about survival. That he's in the very back, so that if he just happens, you know, it just comes down to it. You know, if the gifts aren't accepted, if he kills my maidservants or takes them as slaves, and if he just kind of knocks out the family one by one, he's at the very back. He can see what's coming. He's on the other side of the river. If he has to, he can run. I mean, have you ever put yourself there? Just kind of make sure that you have an escape room. That if nobody else can escape, at least you have your own escape room. So he's making this journey in response to God. He's praying to God. He's counting on God. But just in case I'm in the back, I can get out. If it doesn't go down so well. And in that night, he starts wrestling. A man comes in the dark and begins to wrestle. And they struggle together. And he can't see who he's wrestling against. But it's an all-night affair. It's an all-night struggle. And they're wrestling together, and the man who is wrestling him, it says that he sees that he is not going to overcome him. He's not able to finally just subdue him. And so, he touches him on the hip. And in touching him on the hip, it's like it's a supernatural touch, that all of a sudden with this touch on the hip, his hip is wounded. It goes to the socket, it goes to the sciatic nerve. And he's in pain, and he won't let go. They keep wrestling. And finally, it's about daybreak. They've been wrestling all night. His hip is injured. He's in pain. And the man who is wrestling with him, the man who touched his hip, says, it's almost daybreak. Let me go. And Jacob, true to form, says, I'm not going to let you go unless you bless me. Okay, do you see how this is true to Jacob's character? grasping the heel at birth. Now grasping, wrestling with this man, not letting go. Finds a way to get the blessing that was for his brother Esau. Finds a way to get the birthright. Even with Laban, he found a way to get Laban's livestock. He got his daughters, he got his grandkids, he got his livestock. I mean, Jacob is a guy who knows how to get over. Jacob is a guy who knows how to get a blessing. The question comes back.
Instead of lingering in the back, having to escape,
puts himself in the front of his family, going to meet Esau for this birthday. And he sees Esau coming. And did you pick up on what he does? He bows down 7 times as he approaches Esau. You remember what the blessing was? Isaac had actually told Jacob that your brother would bow down to you. What is happening here is that Jacob is basically trying to undo or make restitution of the blessing that he stole. And so instead of thinking, I got the blessing, you better bow down to me, he realizes that he didn't rightly deserve that blessing, and that blessing was intended for Esau, and so he goes and he bows down before Esau. And with the gifts that he's giving, not only is he hoping to kind of make atonement for his sin against Esau, but it's kind of like, I took your blessing, God has blessed me, maybe I can make up for it by blessing you, by giving gifts to you of what God has. He is trying to make things right with everything that he has. From the possessions God has blessed him with, to showing him favor and humility by bowing down before him. And each segment of the family bows down before him. Now look what happens here. Let's see, we are at verse 4, chapter 33. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. We really don't know Esau's story, but something happened with Esau between that time when Jacob had to run and he was plotting Jacob's death to this moment. It's like God was working on both sides of the brothers. And God was doing with Jacob what needed to happen with Jacob in order to bring him back to this place. But surprise of all surprises, here is Esau welcoming him back. He's already forgiven him. And embraces him and hugs him. And they begin to talk. And Jacob's saying, please accept this gift. And Esau actually wants him to go on together. Jacob, not willing to do that yet, goes his own way. But there's now peace between them. Now, here's kind of why we walk for a moment. The big picture. Remember Cain and Abel? is set on murdering the other, and you might even say the other in some ways deserved it. And yet God has been faithful to work and to bring them to the place where now there is reconciliation. And God has brought Jacob to the place where God can bless through Jacob and use him to bring blessing to the brother he betrayed and blessing to all the families of the earth. Are you seeing the picture? Are you seeing the faithfulness of God to create a people from whom he can bless? So this isn't simply God trying to make things right or taking Jacob on this journey to get him to finally make things right with Esau. This is much bigger than that. This involves all of the human race. God's determination to recreate family to where there's blessing instead of murder. Trying to recreate the human race to where we finally own ourselves, we finally own our sins, we finally get honest with God about who we are. And as we get honest with God, God begins to change us and to work us and to wrestle with us. Yes, to wound us so that we can finally learn how to trust him, finally learn how to live in peace, finally reconcile. So Jacob lives on. Now he lives on confidence. Now he lives on trusting God. Now he lives on being used of God to bless others, even the brother betrayed him. Excuse me. I think about this in even kind of bigger picture ways. God comes to us not simply in a van who wrestles with us in the dark, but God comes to us in Jesus. In a man who not only wrestles with us, but in a man who actually dies for us. That we might be reconciled to God, that we might be made new, that we might be changed to where we are used of God to bless others. God doesn't just come in the dark of night, God comes in the light of day in his very Son, Jesus. But do you realize that part of the work of Jesus is not simply to reveal to us who God is, but is to reveal us to us. Just like the man wrestling with Jacob, what's your name? Did you hear the question at the beginning of the service when the gospel was being read and Jesus is in dialogue with this woman at the well? Did you hear Jesus say, "Go get your husband"? And the woman says, "I don't have a husband." And what did Jesus tell her? Right. You've been married 5 times, and the man you're with now is not your husband. Jesus was confronting the woman with the woman. See, Jesus does that with each of us. Jesus constantly confronts us with ourselves. And one of the biggest challenges of life, and in particular the Christian life, one of the biggest challenges is to own yourself, to confess who you are before God. And when we don't confess who we are to God, then we don't know the peace of God. We don't know the reconciling grace of God. And we don't have the power to go and be our Esau's. Admitting of who she is, she also gets word about who Jesus is, and her life is transformed. The way the Gospel of John basically ends is Jesus is talking to Peter, and he asked Peter 3 times if Peter do you love her. Why did he ask Peter 3 times? Because Peter denied Jesus like he's saying, Peter, what's your name? It's like he's saying to the woman of the well, go get your husband. He's saying to Peter, this one who had been following Jesus, he's confronting Peter with Peter. Peter is grieved and broken. Finally, Peter just says, Lord, you know all things. You know everything about me. It's frail. God is calling us to that in this text. God is calling us in the story of Jacob to confess our name to God, to confess who we are to God. And just as God didn't light Jacob out, but kind of allowed Jacob to move, and Jacob is changed, Jacob has a new future of reconciliation with Esau awaits. Just as God kind of gave Jacob a new name, a new life, and finally admitted who he was, that's what God is for us. That if we would just admit who we are to God, God would meet us. God would meet us with a new name that would empower us to not only be ourselves in the presence of God, but then to be ourselves with each other. And there would be reconciliation. Reconciliation means something more. He comes to us in Jesus. In the body of broken bones. And in His broken body, Jesus, stand.